We have a special visit to a very timely makom. But by way of introduction, I want to introduce you to a book that has been very important to me in recent years. It's not an easy book to get a hold of. I received this book, much to Nechama's chagrin, as usual, as a gift of someone who was moving, and they were just deciding to get rid of some of their svarim, so I happily received this set of used books. So if you ever know people like this, without letting anybody in my house know, just tell me. When we moved to the new house, I don't know what she was doing in the garage, but she was poking around the garage, and she found a box of books that was not supposed to be discovered until after we moved. So you have to be careful. It's far, very hard to hide svarim. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to pass this around because it is a very fascinating sefer. And it really is what tipped me off to thinking about our limud today. It's a collection of svarim called Sefer HaMoadim. It was published in the 50s in Tel Aviv by an editor, Dr. Yom Tov Levinsky. And what it is a compendium of all kinds of different articles and insights and pictures and historical nuggets that have to do with Yom Tovim. It's a fascinating work. So you'll find in here poems from Zionist poets from the 19th century, and you'll find Chassidische Worts, and you'll find essays from, I don't know, philosophers. You'll find anything and everything, especially, and part of the reason why it's so useful, especially offbeat weird things that you can't find anywhere else. That who's going to go collecting these weird items? Well, this fellow did, and he did us a great tova. So at one point, I was looking in this sefer, and I saw he has an entire, as of course, this volume, which I'm going to pass around, is on Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Tu B'Shvat. But he has, in this section on Chanukah, some amazing things that I never heard of, I never saw in my life. I'm going to pass it around. You have a picture here of Aliyah L'Modi'in B'Chanukah, Talmidei HaGymnasia of Herzliya in 1909. Chanukah Tov Reish Samach Tes. Now, where he got this picture, I don't know. But there are a bunch of pictures and essays, especially from secular writers that pertain to different Yom Tovim. Here you're going to have a picture of a guy of what's called Mirutz HaLapid. What is a lapid? A torch. So there was a torch runner. This is the Zionist caricature of, you know, the guys running. I'll pass it around. He collects all of these items about a cultural phenomenon of which I had never heard. I was never familiar with this. Maybe people who grew up and were educated about this or heard about this know that it exists. I never knew that it exists. And you're talking about a phenomenon of a whole group of people over 100 years, you know, from this, and the secular Gnazim Chevra, it's not like a Chabad menorah that they're running with. It's a story that has to do with Jewish heroism, which is being tied to, of course, the story of Chanukah, and it's being brought back to the city that we're going to talk about today. It's called Modi'in. So I'm going to pass this around so you can take a look if you want. Pass it. There's a little paper for the first picture, and you can pass it through. Everybody can take a look at it. It's a whole world. This phenomenon, there are lots of people involved. If you look on the yellow sheet, this I got from the National Library of Israel. Does everybody have sheets in the back? Are we short? Do we have extras? Oh, there are some back there. Okay, if you don't have, there should be in the back. If you look on the yellow sheet, this was an article from a secular Israeli newspaper in 1954. Begeshem Shotev Higia Mirutz HaLapid Shel Maccabi LeYerushalayim. In the 1950s, I don't know, maybe they still do this today, they had a torch bearer. This was a torch which was run, Mirutz HaLapid HaMesorati, that was on Chanukah from the Histadrut HaMaccabi was yesterday, where 500 youth were running from the morning from Modi'in, and they ran to Yerushalayim. Who is Maccabi? So on the top right, you see this is the actual website today of the Maccabi Youth Movement. Tnuat Hanor HaMaccabi HaTzair, the young Maccabis. It exists. I didn't even know that such a thing exists, but thanks to Google, you can find a lot of things. This is a youth movement in Israel that was founded in 1929. They are the ones who were the originators, it sounds like, of this practice of the torchbearer and going from, I don't know if they still do this today, maybe they do, we should find out. And I'm thinking about what is all of this? When I got the Sefer and I'm reading it and I'm looking at it, I'm like, what do we make of it? It's so interesting. How do we, from a Torah vantage point, understand this phenomenon? This phenomenon, which is, you know, on the one hand, very new in the last 100, 150 years. On the other hand, it's tapping into something that's very old. That's the background. The city that we're going to talk about today is on your yellow maps. The city is called Modi'in. It was founded in... Anybody know when they started people living in Modi'in? It was actually very recent, 1996. And now it's one of the largest cities in Israel. You drive there, it's enormous. Before that, there were two small, not settlements, like neighborhoods, two small municipalities. One was called Re'ut, and the other one was called Maccabim. They were founded in the 1980s, and then in the 90s, when they built Modi'in, they incorporated it. So today, the municipality of Modi'in actually includes three names. It's Modi'in, Maccabim, and Re'ut. This, if you look on the bottom right map, when you zone in, where you see where Modi'in is. Modi'in is north and west of Yerushalayim, just a little bit west of Yerushalayim. We'll see where that fits in a little bit. But you see that the jagged line there? Anybody know what that line is? Right. You see there are two. Why are there two? What's that? That's right. Because in 1949, there was a no man's land, which was created Alpi the armistice. So there was actually an international debate about the Maccabim neighborhood in Modi'in, because a portion of Modi'in, you see, is actually over one left side of the armistice. It's actually in no man's land. So depending on what neighborhood you live in Modi'in, you may be actually over into, not the other side, but into the middle. Now, take a look just north of Modi'in are two little Moshavim. One is called Chashmonaim. Many of us know people living in these places. And right across the road from that is Moshav Matisyahu. So you have places called Maccabim, Chashmonaim, and Matisyahu. We'll have to figure out why. Just saying, you might have a guess. Okay? I want to put this on hold. Now we know where we're going to go, but I want to put this on hold to address a Rambam. A Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Gimel Halacha Aleph. You could share. Okay. The Rambam tells us something very unexpected. The Rambam is in Perek Gimel because the Rambam took the laws of Purim and Chanukah and put them together. Bebayis Sheni, so that's why this is the first halacha in the section on Chanukah, even though it's the third chapter. Don't be surprised. It's the third chapter because it's coming after Purim, but it's the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah. This is the first thing the Rambam is going to tell us. Bebayis Sheni, in the second Beis HaMikdash, Kishe Malchei Yavon Gazru Gzeros Al Yisrael, when the Greek kings decreed decrees against the Jewish people, Ubitlu datam, dat means religious. So ubitlu datam, they nullify, they try to stop people from observing Yiddishkeit. Velo hinichu osam lasuk b'torah v'mitzvos, and they did not allow them to engage in Torah and mitzvos. Upashtu yadam, and they stretched out their hands b'mamonam, in their money ubibnosehem, and in their daughters v'nichnasu lahechel uportzu b'pratzos v'timotaros. And they entered into the sanctuary, and they smashed, pratzos means literally breaches, and they defiled the pure. And the Rambam goes further, v'tzar lahem liyisrael, and they made the Jews suffer, ma'od mipneim, v'lochatsum, lachatz means pressure, right? They oppressed them, lachatz godol, great lachatz. So when is this taking place? Let's say 167 BCE. When we say Yavon here, are we actually referring to somebody from Greece? No. Because after the death of Alexander of Macedon, Alexander the Great, the Greek Empire split. The Jewish people in the land of Israel were under the influence of the Seleucid Greeks. And initially, it wasn't so bad. But then, a guy by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes, it's Antiochus the Fourth, he took over, and he was a complicated figure, but he was the one who instituted the anti-religious decrees, among other persecutions of Jews in the land of Israel. So initially, the Greeks weren't necessarily a problem for Jews, but then it became a significant problem, and we associate Antiochus with Greece, even though he wasn't from Greece, he was from Syria, but he is from the Greek Empire, a piece of the Greek Empire. The Rambam is giving you this background, and then the Rambam tells us, Ad, third line, Ad Sherichim Aleim, until he had mercy on them, Elokei Avosenu, the God of our forefathers, Vahushiyam Yadam, and he saved us from them, Vihitzilam. And what happens? V'gavru b'nei hashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gedolim, and the great kohanim ha-gedolim, the great kohanim from the family of hashmonai, which is an interesting question, what the word hashmonai means. Was it somebody's name or was it their family name? There were family names of kohanim, which we'll talk about in a little bit. V'hargum, and they killed them. V'hoshiu Yisrael miyadam, and they saved the Jews from them. V'hamidu melech min ha-kohanim, and they established a king from the Kohanim, v'chazra malchus liYisrael, and the leadership, the hegemony, the dominion, the kingdom, literally the malchus, a melech, it returned to the Jewish people, yeser al mosayim shanim, more than 200 years, ad hachurban hasheni, until the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay. This Rambam is a problem. Which is a good thing, by the way, because we, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbeim, Bnei Yeshiva, the way we make a living is by difficult Rambams. So if all the Rambams were good, we would be out of a job. So thankfully, this is a good Rambam to make a living off, because this Rambam is shocking. Why on earth does the Rambam give us the historical background of Chanukah? The Rambam, the Mishnah Torah, is a halachic work. The Rambam, if he follows the pattern of elsewhere in the Yad, he should have said, at the beginning, he should have said, Chayav Adam Lahadlik Nerus Chanukah, Vizeu. Mapitom. This is a very strange Rambam. It's very unusual. Now, one aspect you might tell me is because the Makar, the source of the mitzvah tonight to light Nerus Chanukah, which is mamish so exciting. It's so exciting that we're on the cusp of Nerus Chanukah, of the light, of the connection to the Nerus Chanukah, is, the Gemara asks the question, where's it saying the Chumash to light Chanukah candles? It doesn't say it anywhere. So one opinion is that because it's a rabbinic mitzvah, one opinion is because it says lo tasur, don't stray from what the rabbis say. The other opinion is sha'al avicha v'yageidcha. Ask your parents. Ask your teachers, ask your elders, your grandparents, and they will tell you. So maybe one shot is that the makor of the mitzvah or the asher kedishanu, how can you say asher kedishanu on Neres Chanukah, is because of tradition. So the Rambam wants to give you the historical background, the tradition of where this gets started. Maybe it's a shvach teretz. It's not such a good teretz. There's got to be a better answer as to why the Rambam thinks it's important to know the historical significance of this story. That's Aleph. All right? Put this Rambam in your pocket. I want to switch gears to another period of history. Another interesting, very interesting period of history from a Jewish military struggle perspective. When is this episode of the Greeks happening? About 165 before the Common Era. This is not the last time that there's going to be a revolt against a foreign occupying military force. What's the foreshadowing? Where is the next time in Jewish history, or the only time that we can think of, in Israel where there's a foreign occupying power and there is an armed revolt, which, by the way, in the next case, does have legs for a little bit, but then it doesn't last. That's right. That's right. The Bar Kokhba rebellion in the times of the persecutions of Hadrian, around 132, 135 of the Common Era. So the Romans were crushing the Jews, and Bar Kokhba, whose name also was, his name was probably his real name. If you knocked on his door, what did the sign say on the little door sign? It said, the Kuziva family. Bar Kuziva. It's a question, what was his real name? Was it Bar Kokhba? Kochav is a star. Kuziva comes from the word kozev, which means deceitful, false. Like the false hopes. So he was either Bar Kokhba, he was either the son of a star, he was either the star future of the Jewish people, or he was Bar Kuziva, he was a failed star. He was probably a shtickle of both. So the story of Bar Kokhba doesn't get a lot of press in the Talmud Bavli, but in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud that was written in Eretz Yisrael not too long after this, there is a significant discussion of Bar Kokhba. That's what we call him, Bar Kokhba. But the Gemara calls him by Bar Kuziva. So in the context of Bar Kokhba, we have, the Gemara first talks about Bar Kokhba and how to get into his band of merry men. It was not an easy thing to do. You had to be very strong. You also had to cut off your thumb, according to one tradition. He was not necessarily a great guy, whatever. But I want to share with you this one episode that the Gemara tells you about Bar Kokhba and an interaction that he had with someone that relates to us. But take a look at it. Some of you may have seen the story, but it's a fascinating, powerful story. It's a Talmud in Yerushalmi, the end of Maseches Tanis. Shalosh Shanim Umechza Asa Adrianus Makif Al Beitar. What does that mean? Okay, there was a siege on Beitar. What is Beitar? A major holdout in the rebellion. How long is the siege going on? 3 years. The Bar Kokhba rebellion lasts for 3 years. During that time, Bar Kokhba is minting coins. He's establishing some provisional government. It's an attempt to establish Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. 3.5 years in Beitar. Remember when we spoke about Yavne and the destruction of Beitar and how overwhelmingly tragic it was? That's because the destruction of Beitar meant the end of Bar Kokhba, the end of the rebellion, the end of the hopes of new Jewish life in Israel. And that's why they had to make the Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv in Yavne. The Yavne, the Yibone. Because this Beitar was the last stronghold. Says the Yerushalmi, V'ahava Reb Elazar HaModai Yoshev Al Hasak V'Al Ha'efer U'mispalo B'chol Yom. There was a Tana. He's mentioned several times in the Mishnahs and the Gemara, usually in an agadic context. What was his name? Elazar HaModai. Why is he called Elazar HaModai? Probably he's from a place called Modai, or you'll find different versions of this in Chazal. It was either called Modais, or Modain, or in the Mishnah it's Modiim. Today we call it Modiin. But in the times of Chazal, they had different names. It was the same name, different formulations. More Greek sounding, more Aramaic sounding, there is a rabbi. His name is Reb Elazar from, probably from Modi'in, what we call Modi'in. And he was davening. He was sitting with sackcloth and afer, ash, umispalo b'chol yom. And he davened every day v'omar, and he said, Ribono olamim, al teshev bedin hayom, al teshev bedin hayom. What does that mean? Don't judge us today. What does it mean? It means, have rachmanus on us. Meaning, what is he davening for? He's supporting Bar Kokhba. He's the spiritual backbone of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And what's so frustrating, boy Adrianus Mezale. So Adrianus, Hadrian, is trying to get rid of Rabbi Elazar HaModai because he understands that it's Rabbi Elazar HaModai's prayers that are sustaining the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So he comes up with a shtick. Whose shtick is this? Omar Lechad Kusoy. Kuthians, Kutim, are people who are living in the area of Eretz Israel. But the relationship that we have with people of the Kusi people is very complicated. Because on the one hand, they observed some Jewish practices, but not all Jewish practices, and they weren't necessarily loyal. They didn't have a fealty to Rabbinic Judaism. So there's one guy, one of the Kusim, who says to the Romans, he says, I have an Eitzah. It takes a year to figure out an Eitzah like this. Slowly. Says, I have an Eitzah. What does he do? Lo tezalacha da'ana chami ma'amavid, and I'll give over the Jewish people to you. So what happens? All le min bava dimisnisa, go fourth line. This Aramaic, you notice, is very odd. It's not Gemara Aramaic. This is Yerushalmi Aramaic. So it's Greek influence, which is why Talmud Yerushalmi is very different than learning Gemara Bavli, because the syntax is very foreign. All of Ashkach Rabbi Elazar HaModai Koim Matzli. He went, this guy, he went and he saw Rabbi Elazar HaModai. Rabbi Elazar HaModai was Matzli, Tzali, Salosone, like we say in Kaddish. He was davening. So he sees the old rabbi, he's fasting, he's davening. Ovad Nafshe Lochishle Bego Udne. Udne, Dalet and Zion in Aramaic are interchangeable. So Udan is like Ozen. So he goes over. Nathan, can I use it as an example? You'll be the rabbi. So he goes over, you're davening. You ready? You're davening. This Kusi goes over to Rabbi Elazar, who's totally unsuspecting, and he probably comes from behind, and he goes like this. He looks like he's talking in his ear, and then he walks away. That's the whole thing. That's the ruse. So you don't know anything that happened, right? I didn't say anything to you, but I just stood there. So the Yerushalmi says, this guy goes over to him, and he whispers in his ear, Chamune b'nei medin tov ein sinu el legabi ben kuzba. So they see a guy who's talking to Rabbi Elazar HaModai, acting suspicious, so they drag him in front of Bar Kokhba. Now the thing is, Bar Kokhba was a nephew, you should know, of Rabbi Elazar HaModai. That makes the story much worse. He was a nephew of Rabbi Elazar HaModai, but even that notwithstanding, Rabbi Elazar HaModai was praying for him for 3 years, and that's how he existed. So they drag him in front of Bar Kokhba, and I'll shorten it just for time purposes. So Bar Kokhba says to him, what did the guy say to you? Maybe there's something going on. And Rabbi Elazar HaModai says, he didn't say anything to me. So I didn't hear a thing. I was busy davening. I don't know what to tell you. And the guy says, no, I was talking to him about how we can conspire to undermine Bar Kokhba. So what does Bar Kokhba do? Fifth line from the bottom, at the end of the line, Yoev Lechad Boet V'Katle. He gives him one kick, Bar Kokhba does, to the sage, and he kills him. He kills him. Comes out of Baskol and says, that's it, it's over. Miyad, after that, Nilka da Beitar, last line, Venerag ben Kuzba. That was the end. It's this interesting story. I mean, it's a tragic story, of course. But why is this Rabbi Elazar HaModai? what is it about Reb Elazar HaModoi that has to do with the Bar Kokhba revolt, and what do we learn from this exchange with Bar Kokhba? That's issue number two. So let's take a step back and understand the context of this place. The Mishnah says in Psachim, source number three, Ezohi Derech Rechoka. Technically speaking, if you are Derech Rechoka from Yerushalayim, you are not legally required to offer the Korban Pesach the first time around. Ezohi Derech Rechoka, what is a far distance? Min HaModiim V'Lachutz. Rabbi Akiva says, if you are from Modiim Vilachut, you are now called a Derech Rechoka. So this is Yerushalayim. This is Ramallah. Those just keeping score. And this is Modiim. So if you are within a radius, you have your approved tractor, and you go all the way around from this circle. So let's say, I guess, Beit Shemesh is probably inside, Beit Lechem is inside, Midbar Yudad, Ma'ale Adumim, Yericho, Ramallah. If you're making a circle, if you're inside this measurement from this area, you are technically, legally, mechuyav to bring the Pesach Rishon Bisman, and if you don't have the excuse of saying, I was too far. Now, if you live up here, if you live in Afula, technically speaking, you could say, I'm going to do Pesach Sheni. I'm going to do the second Pesach in ER. I'm going to get there in time. But if you live min amodiyin v'lifnim, so draw a circle around this area, you are chayav, you don't have the excuse of being called Derech Rechoka, according to Rabbi Akiva. So you have to know where you live, and whether or not you're mechuyav to come for Pesach Rishon, whether you have the excuse. How far, in the times of the Gemara, was Modiyin? Like, we see it today. So this is Modiin, this is Lapid, also going to be related to this story. Makabim Reut. This, we know where it is today. You take the 443. Says the Gemara, Amar Ula, first line of the Gemara, Minad Modiim li Yerushalayim, Chamisha Asar Milim Havya. His opinion is, now, it's not clear that he knew this from historical tradition, whether he saw it. He's living in Babylonia, but he says that the shear, the measure of using that protractor to go around was 15 mil. 15 mil. So you notice that, just like today, a lot of people, why do they live in Modiin? Because they want to live in Yerushalayim or HaKodesh, but it's too expensive. So they move to Modiin. They have an easy commute, relative, depending on the traffic. And that's part of the reason why they built Modiin, was to alleviate the population intensity in one place. So the Gemara is saying that Modiin is relatively close to Yerushalayim. You can't be called Derech Rechoka if you're in Modiin. You're close by. What's the big deal? You drive from Modiin to Yerushalayim. It's 15 mil. That's what the Gemara says in terms of the distance. What is the historical significance of Modiin? So now we get to the actual story. Turn the page. This is called Sefer HaMakabim. Sefer HaMakabim, it's not a part of the Tanakh. It's a historical work which is extant in Greek. Originally, Sefer HaMakabim was written in Hebrew. We do not have the original edition, the original version of Sefer HaMakabim. We have the Greek translation, which was maintained after the Septuagint. It covers about a 40-year period from the rise of Antiochus Epiphanes 165 BCE until the period of the Chashmonaim. We don't know exactly what the original name of the book was. It was called, now it's called, Sefer HaMakabim. It's also not clear whether or not the word Makabim is spelled Mem, Kuf, Beis, Yud, or it's spelled Mem, Kuf, Beis, Yud. Mem, Kuf, Beis, Yud is known colloquially as the acronym for a phrase, Mi Kamocha Ba'elim Hashem. If you spell Makabi with a Kuf, that's how it's referred. If you spell it with a kuf, that's not what it means. So the Sefer HaMakabim is this description, this historical description of the Mered, the revolt of the Chashmonaim. This is the earliest and first-hand account of what took place in this time. It's written not from a biased, everything is, has some bias, but it's written from an objective standpoint to trace the history of what happened during this period and the miracle of the Jews and their survival or their revolt. There is a second book of Maccabim that's not related to this, which was another book in the Apocrypha, means it's not included in the biblical canon. That's later on. That was originally written in Greek, and it tells a different story. We're going to start now, just so you, because this is, now you're going to see where Modin comes in, and where we have a historical account of this, because there is no book in Tanakh. Even in the Gemara, there's very little reference. There's one short piece, a very passing reference in the second parakim of the Gemara of Shabbos. But this is the primary source that we have for the history of the story of Chanukah. Bayamim ahem, haya kohen b'Yisrael ushmo Matisyahu ben Yochanan ben Shimon mibnei Yehoyariv b'Yerushalayim. There was a family of Kohanim. Their name was the Yehoyariv family. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, the Kohanim were broken down into 24 families. These families, they're called Mishmarot. They served on a rotating basis. So if there are 52 weeks in a year, some of those are Yontif. So give or take 2 weeks a year, your family, your Mishmar, would serve in the Beis Hamikdash. The rest of the time you spent learning and teaching and serving the community. So you went 2 weeks a year to Yerushalayim plus holidays. Working 2 weeks a year is pretty good. But yeah. So we know, by the way, there is a, let's say on Tisha B'Av, there is a kina of Eicha Yoshva Chavetzelas HaSharon about the Kohanim. It lists all the 24 Mishmaros. You will find this name, Yehoyariv, as one of the 25 Mishmaros families. Each one had a big name. Now, you don't know how many people, I mean, I don't know how many people were in this family and who exactly was related, but it was a big family name, Yehoyariv. Maybe, you know, some of us who are Kohanim, maybe we're from the same family. Who knows? We'll find out one day soon. Halavad. So they were from the Yehoyariv family. This is going to be important. It's going to be important. I won't leave you hanging on that. We'll Mirtz Hashem get to that before we finish. Why I think that's important. They came from Yerushalayim, but where did they live? V'hu yoshev bahar Modais. And he lives in this mountain of Modais. So I don't know exactly when the family of this of Matisyahu left Yerushalayim, came to settle Modin. Probably it was a cheaper apartment there. Had a better, I don't know. So remember, we're now second Beis Hamikdash period. He's living in Modis. Vayu lo chamisha banim ve'ela shmosam. And they had five kids. Yochanan, they called him Kodshi. Shimon, he had another nickname. Yehuda, they called him Hamakabi. That's the name. Elazar, Hachorani. Yonasan, Hofsi, they called him. These were Greek nicknames that they had because they're living in Greek times. Elazar, we could have thought about this shir in the context of Elazar, because I think traditionally this son of Matisyahu, Elazar, who was killed in a famous episode with an elephant, the Greeks had elephants, that battle apparently took place in the area which is today called Elazar, which is not near Modin at all, right? Modin is up here. Elazar is down here, near Hebron, near Alon Shvut. But you have to keep in mind also that the battles between the Jews, the revolt, was going on up and down for many years, long after the Chanukah story. After the Chanukah story, for several years, they still battled the Greeks. It wasn't finished. They lit the menorah. It wasn't just Shalom on Yisrael. They went back to fighting, which continued for several years in different areas. So Elazar, that makom they call today Elazar, we know people who live in this place, that's the traditional, I think that's the traditional place where they say that Elazar, the son of Matisyahu HaKohen, was killed by the elephant. And he goes with the spear to try to sabotage the Greeks. Okay. And what happens? Vayar Matisyo et Hatoivos Asher Biuda Biushalayim Vayakonar Vayomer. Oy vey, oy li, ki noladati lachzos Asher Rami. I see this terrible tragedy that's going on here. The Sefer HaMagim tells you exactly what's going on. It says there's terrible persecution and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Look what happens. Vekiria Kadosha Biad Biadei B'nei Nechar. This is the text I pulled from Sfaria, so you have the translation, you can follow along. And look at this. The Mikdash Eloka Bekamp Bekav Zarim. The Beis HaMikdash is held by the Greeks, so they defiled everything. The Gemara discusses that not just that they defiled the menorah, they defiled all the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, including the Mizbeach. They had to actually take away the stones of the altar. They hauled them away. They had to build a new one. They had to actually deconstruct it and rebuild a new one. They kept the stones because they had Kedusha, but they put them in an office because it was totally defiled with the pagan worship. What happens to us? Everything is terrible. Go down about 60% of the way down, middle of the line, Vayikru Matisyo Banavis Bigdam. And Matisyo and his sons, they tear their clothes. Vayisablu, they Vayilbashu Sak, Vayisablu Ma'od. Now what happens? So, you see where it is, Vayihi Kasher Bo Kitea Melech Ir Modiis. So now, some of the government officers, they have a guy who comes from the Seleucid Empire. He shows up in Modiin, what they called at that time, Modiis. And how is Modiin? What do they say? What is the topography of Modiin? For those who have driven there, you know what it's like. It's like a mountain. There are lots of mountains. There are caves in these mountains. So he shows up in Modiin. And he says, Lahavir es ha'am, he tells the people to take them away, mitoras Hashem, la'avodas alilim, v'lizboach lam, and to offer pagan sacrifices, not Yiddishkeit. Vayilvo aleim rabim b'bnei Yisrael. Unfortunately, many Jews went along with this Greek movement. They became Hellenized. However, umatisyo ubanav hiskazku, Vayom Rusari Amelech El Matisyo Lemor. He says to him, Hein ish nagid v'nichbar ata bekerav amcha. You are a prominent guy. They identified him as a prominent member of the community. He's a Kohen. He's from the Mishpach of Yehoyarib. They said, no, if we can get this guy, it'll be good. And so they appeal to him. They say, no, come with us. The Greeks say, come to our side. And you have a lot of family. You should come first to do what the king says, like it is all over the place, and you should offer a sacrifice. And through that, of course, now they start with the Schmaltz, fourth line from the end, Vato banecha timtzu chein b'nei ha'melech. Oh, the king will like you. Everybody will look up to you, and he'll give you, they start with the Zav and the Kesef, they'll give you bribes. Everybody, Vayisa matisyo es kolo vayomar. Third line from the end. Im omnom yasu kol avdi amelach goy goy me aloha v'yishmu l'kolo l'amir zchukei amelach. Even though all the other nations, they want to bow to the Seleucid Greeks, you want to have a pagan religion, all the other guys, gesunta heit. I don't care. Lo kein anochi u'mishpachti, says Sefer HaMakim, top of the next page. We won't do that. Ki lo nosu yom u'smo me'achri chukas abaseinu. We won't leave our fathers. Chalilo nonu l'ashem mi'mitzvus Hashem. This is the Hebrew translation from the Greek, which is a translation from the original Hebrew. U'la'afer b'iso. Chas v'shalom, we won't do this. Lachain, es dase ha'melech lo nasa, we won't do this. So what did they do? One of them, one of the Hellenized Jews, starts to go sacrifice. Vayar Matisyahu, fourth line down, he sees Vayachal Uvoba Tibra Kinoso Al Torah Elokav. It doesn't say, by the way, that he was actually militarily trained. It doesn't say he was strong. It doesn't say that he worked out a lifetime ever. He just gets up in the spirit of Pinchas, the same Lashon of Vativar Kinoso, Vayaritz Bachamoso Alaish, and he kills him right at the altar. They smash the altar and they also kill the emissary of the government. Well, what do you think it does when a local prominent guy gets his family to kill the local government emissary? That sparks a revolt. And this is the beginning. It's taking place where? In Modiin. And so he calls other people. And where do they go? Last line. Vayivrachu banav el hari hamidbar. Around Modi'in, it's all hills and caves. So the what we call today the Maccabees, the Chashmonaim, the Matisyahu family, they all run to the caves. And they begin guerrilla warfare to defend the Jews against the Seleucid Greeks. And many Jews followed them. Yes? So they had here what was called a bama, which was a backyard mizbeach, which from a halachic standpoint was outlawed, but it was built. It was going to be used for Avodah Zarah. When you have, once Yerushalayim was built, there's an Isur Bamos. You're not allowed to have backyard altars. But there were Hellenized Jews, and lo aleinu, they were, you know, sacrificing to pagan Jews. Yes, yes, you're talking in Modi'in. That's why we're talking, yeah. Yes, the whole issue of the Benosayim. Ah, so now we can wrap it all up together. The origins of the Chanukah story from the Rabban Ba'ad Ma'atim military standpoint gets off the ground here in Modi'in. And that's why, if we go back to the yellow sheet with the map, you have neighborhoods that are called Maccabim and Choshmona, in the neighborhood nearby of Chashmonaim, and Matisyahu, and Lapid, because these are Jews who are standing up for themselves. Why Dafka Matisyahu? Mistama, he was a big tzaddik, but there's a deeper message, I wonder. Take a look at this Tosefta. Look at the Tosefta, source 4. Magalguin Tzchus Liom Zakai V'chov Liom Chayav. We have a tradition that you roll over one tragedy to the next. They're related. So the Beis HaMikdash the first time was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. The second time was Archa destroyed on Tisha B'Av. When was it destroyed? Says the Gemara. The Tosefta. Motzoi Shabbos Haya U'motzoi Shvi'as Haya. It was on a Motzoi Shabbos, was the night of Tisha B'Av. And it was the end of the Shemitah cycle. U'mishmarto Shel. Whose Mishmara was it? Shel Yehoyariv. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and according to the tradition, it was the first time and the second time. Both of them were under the watch of Yehoyariv. Whose family was Matisyahu from? Yehoyariv. Think about it. It's in their consciousness. They were the ones on duty when the first time when the Babylonians came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So now we have the second Beis HaMikdash, which is rebuilt, but it doesn't look good because it's run by the Greeks. It's ransacked. So who is it that feels the achrayus, who feels like they can't watch this happen anymore? Because we saw this already once with our own eyes. Matisyahu is from the same family, from the Yehoyariv family. I think it's not an accident. They saw the Beis HaMikdash go down the first time. They said, we're not going to let this happen again on our watch. We would rather die than see what happens a second time. It's interesting. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, Sefer Tzadik Livracha, he thought that the Gemara says in the end of Tanis, that the Gemara is a criticism of the Yehoyariv family. Because the Gemara says that when they destroy the first Beis HaMikdash, the Pirchei Kuhuna, the children, the young kids, had the keys of the Beis HaMikdash. They took the keys and they threw it, Klapei Shemaya, up to the heavens. And the Gemara says they never came down. Kevyachol, the Rabbono Shel Olam, took the keys to the Beis HaMikdash away. So there are different ways of interpreting that Gemara. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik thought that Gemara is a criticism. And he said, what do you mean? You're just going to give him back the keys? So comes Matisyahu and his family, says, maybe our great-grandparents, they saw the destruction. Maybe they gave away the keys. We will not do that. We will fight until the last man to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash that we saw destroyed the first time. This is the origins of the Tkuma. Right here in Modi'in. And that's why all these places are named after the Hashmonaim. If you go back to the front page of the packet on the pictures, so I can't say with certainty, historically, do we know for sure that this is Po Tomon Matisyo Ben Yochanan Kohen Godol Zechus Yogan Aleinu? I'm not sure. I don't know. Right? The Kirvat, the Kravot of Modi'in and the Kivrei HaMakabim, there's a sign. You go to Israel, you drive by this sign on the highway. Is it this place that's exactly his grave? I don't know. But that's the Makom, that's the area. Right? There's a big question. Is exactly today's Modi'in, is on the site of the Modi'in that was in the times of the Mishnayos? Maybe it was a couple of kilometers away. There's a big machlokas among the archaeologists where exactly they lived. Where did Matisyo go to the Makulet? So, I have to ask, I don't know. Where did he get the oil for the first one? I don't know. Did he go to Jewel? Did he go to Hungarian? Where was it? Did they have the village market? Whatever they had, but it's in this area. So this area represents the Tkuma, the revival of Jewish sovereignty. Now we go back to the Rambam. The Rambam told us something unusual, but very instructive. I don't want to say something bad, but we have to say the truth. And the Maccabim and Matisyo and Yehuda Maccabi and Elazar, these are great Gedolim and Tzadikim, fighters, mamish, the greatest warriors. But unfortunately, as we know, their descendants were not the most righteous people. They were not. And there are actually no more descendants of the Hashmonaim, of the Maccabim. The Ribbono Shel Olam wiped them all away. They were all destroyed. They were very corrupt. The Kohen Gadol, in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, was just a puppet. He wasn't a religious person. I mean, he was religious, but he wasn't a spiritual person. And the Malchus was... Bechlal wasn't supposed to be that Kohanim are supposed to be the kings. There's supposed to be a separation of church and state in a certain way in Yiddishkeit. It's not the same. But the amazing thing is that for all of this struggle and all this disappointment, what does the Rambam say? The Rambam says we should know as a halacha that there was a historical context to this thing. And the Rambam said in the last line, V'chazra malchus liYisrael yasra amasayim shanim, that for more than 200 years, Jews ran the state. They were not religious. They were corrupt. They didn't follow what it says in the Torah. They didn't connect to Ribbono Shel Olam. It doesn't matter. Because the fact that Jews were in charge is still valuable. Even though it wasn't perfect. Even though it was very disappointing. Even though when you look in Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, do you know who gets excised from the list of the Masorah and Pirkei Avos? The Zakenim, they're there. The Nevi'im are there. The Anshei Knesset Gedolah are there. You know who's not there? The people who are teaching Torah for 50 weeks a year, the Kohanim. They're cut out of the Masorah. They're not mentioned in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. And probably for a reason. Despite that, the Rambam says, we should know Chazra Malchus LiYisrael Yasra Masayim Shem. There was a significant accomplishment of Jews having authority. The Gemara says in Chagiga, B'mistarim Tivkanavshi, the Ribbono Shel Olam kiviyochel, he cries. Why does he cry? So one opinion is, in the Gemara, Mipnei Ga'avason Shel Yisrael, the Jewish pride that was taken away from them and given to the Umas HaOlam. The bizyonis, the Jews have to suffer in exile like a bunch of mendicants at the United Nations and other places. Those bizyonis, they make the Ribbono Shel Olam cry. So even though these Hashmonaim, their family, were not people to look up to from a spiritual vantage point, there's still something kedai. There's still something that's worthwhile. This perspective is very valuable. We think about now the story of Rabbi Elazar HaMolgoi. This is where the disconnect breaks down. This is where it totally crumbles. This is where the tragedy ends. Rabbi Elazar HaMolgoi is davening for Bar Kokhba. Right? It's the same thing. There's oppression.
There's physical oppression and religious oppression under the Romans. You couldn't teach Torah. This is the same time as Rabbi Akiva. So Bar Kokhba says, we're gonna revolt. Here again, there is a spiritual undercurrent. In the time of the Chashmonaim, it was the focus on the Beis HaMikdash itself. It was going to be, we're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to reconstitute it, we're going to dedicate it, we're going to fix the breaches, we're going to be metahir it, we're going to purify it. That was what Matisyahu was so aggrieved about in the first place. Second time around, there is no Beis HaMikdash, but there's still Jewish life. So Rebbe Lazar HaModai, he's in Modi'in, and he's davening for the revolt to be successful, for the Tekuma. But Bar Kokhba doesn't see that. Bar Kokhba only sees the physical. So what does he do? He doesn't even engage his uncle, Rebbe Lazar HaModai. When he suspects him of quote-unquote treason, he kicks him and he kills him. That disconnect between the physical revolt and the spiritual underpinning, that ultimately leads to, what the Yerushalmi said, is the end of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. The same way that the Chashmonaim, after several generations, the Gemara says, all die, it's because they lost the connection between the military uprising and the spiritual values, and the Torah, and the Beis HaMikdash, and what it really was about. Once that disconnect is created, once that gap begins to widen, then the military might doesn't have a lot to show for itself. There needs to be a connection. But it means that both sides are valuable. How would Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik V'Karshel Bracha, look at these guys, these secular guys in 1909, running from their gymnasia in Herzliya to the caves of the Maccabim? The Maccabi Meirutz HaLapid. So you can look at it in two ways. You can look and say, no, bunch of guys with Koba temples and pants that are too high. Like, no, Bemet. It says, where's the Gemara? Where's the Neiros Chanukah? Where is it? It's not there. Never. Or you could say, Naniach, Beseder, it's not there. We need to be Mishaper at HaMatzav. But it doesn't mean it doesn't have any value. It doesn't mean that the tukuma, that the physical resistance, that the military uprising was not important. It avada was important. And it is important. We just have to find a way to infuse the milchama with the neros. It's interesting that the alanisim, that aspect of Halal and Hodah relates primarily to the miracle of the Milchama, not to the miracle of the oil. We incorporate in the davening, in the Hodah of davening, and in benching, of course, we incorporate that Rabin Ba'ad Ma'atim, Tmeim Ba'ad Tahurim, specifically the military campaign, because that has significant value. But if you take that away from the Beis HaMikdash, then it loses its value. So it's our Masorah, it's our tradition to look at a place like Modi'in and aspire to bring those together. To bring together not just the lapid of the Zionist military, you know, physical activities, not just to view that as an ends in and of itself, but to view that as a means to bringing it about the spiritual tekuma of the people. And that's a process. And we're living in that process. But the idea of Chanukah, and this diuk in the Rambam teaches us not to denigrate the accomplishments of the military side. Even if it's not spiritually sound, but it's part of something. And the fact is, yes, because we had Jewish leadership, because we had a Jewish government, maybe it was dysfunctional, maybe they couldn't make a government, maybe they were fighting with each other. I'm not talking about, you know, which news you're reading. Today, 160 BC, it's Elbazach, it's the same thing, it's a challenge. It's not perfect, but at the same time, look at the brachos. Look at the hudah.
We say Al HaNisim for that itself. It's not perfect, but the idea of focusing on this path helps us view the world in which we live today. If, Rachmana Litzlan, the physical side is going to kick the spiritual side of Rebbe Elazar HaModoy, then we have a problem. We have a serious problem. But if we understand that those people who are not yet inspired, they're part of a process, and we can bring them in, and we need, instead of kicking them, we need to inspire them. We need to give them love and encouragement and find ways to bring them close. Then maybe we can bring these two together. We can bring them together. And that's what Rebbe Elazar HaModoy was doing in Modi'in. Modi'in is not just a place of physical gvura, where they go to the kever, the chashmonaim, and say, we're strong, but it's also a place of spiritual gvura, of mil Hashem Elai. What motivated the revolt in the first place for Matisyahu and Yehuda Maccabi was Skaf Dafka the Ruchnius. So we need to keep pushing to remind ourselves in our lives and the Jewish people as a whole that both of these have a place, and we're looking to try to create that synergy, that wholeness. Whereas Bayama Behem Basman Hazeh, where they had both the physical, the state, but they also had the spiritual, the reconstituted Beis HaMikdash. I wish all of us a lichtige Chanukah, beautiful Chanukah for you, for all of your families.